First, the issue of how we should tax the wealthiest Americans has been front and center lately after a variety of proposals from lawmakers. Democratic Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez recently suggested raising marginal income tax rates for people at the highest income levels. And Senator Elizabeth Warren is proposing an annual wealth tax of 2% on people with net worth over $50 million and 3% for fortunes over $1 billion. On the other side of the aisle, Republican Senate leader Mitch McConnell is backing a bill that would end the estate tax, which is already narrowed in 2017's tax overhaul bill. With all of these ideas out there, we're taking a look at what impact they might have, what's been effective in the past, and what's possible today. Caroline Bruckner is the managing director of the COGOD Tax Policy Center at American University. Caroline, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, before we get into some of the details here, why do you think this has become such a hot topic of conversation in early 2019?
I think because the polling is so good. Both Fox News and Politico have done recent polling of everyday Americans on what they think about raising taxes on the wealthy. And the numbers are pretty high in the double digits that most Americans feel comfortable with trying to raise taxes on wealthy folks.
Now, it looks simple in some ways when we talk about, okay, raise or lower taxes on wealthy people, but it's pretty complicated as I start to dig into it more. There's the tax rates, sure. There's various kinds of loopholes and shelters. How difficult an issue is this to sort out?
Well, it can be as simple or as complicated as you make it. So if you just want to raise rates, that can be very simply done. We have always adjusted marginal tax rates fairly regularly to either raise taxes on most Americans or lower taxes on most Americans. And keep in mind that the marginal tax rates that were cut a little bit as part of the tax reform bill, they weren't changed all that much. The brackets didn't change all that much. It's just the marginal tax rates were just cut a little bit. So the 39.6% top tax rate went down to 37% in the most recent effort. And so it's not really that challenging to just change rates. Now, what Elizabeth Warren is talking about doing is instituting a whole brand new tax. And that's where it gets really complicated.
Let's start with the marginal tax rate. First of all, can you explain how that works? Because sometimes you see a number like 70%, and just glancing at it, you think, wow, you're going to take 70% of everything that person makes over the course of a year. No, talk about how marginal tax rates work, please.
Right. So we have a progressive tax system, which means that we tax income as it's accumulated. Your wage income typically is the way most Americans have income at progressive rates that progressively increase as your income goes up. So everybody pays, say, for example, 10%, which is the marginal tax rate on their first $9,000, and then assuming that you're a single taxpayer. And then everybody pays 12% on amounts they earn between $9,000 and $38,000, and then 22% on amounts between 82% and 100, or I'm sorry, 38,000 and 82,000, so on and so forth. But the top tax rate is 37%. And that is, so for amounts that anyone earns in any given year over $500,000, if you're a single person, you pay a 37% tax rate just on those amounts. It's not a flat tax rate. You don't earn, say, $500,000 and pay $37,000 on that entire $500,000 amount. Mm-hmm.
And how does that top marginal tax compare historically with what we've seen in the United States?
Well, I mean, as recently as 1980, we did have a top tax rate of 70%. Reagan was elected on a platform of vowing to cut individual tax rates, and he worked with Democrats to create bipartisan legislation to do so. So it's, you know, historically tax rates have been much higher than where they are now, and, you know, where that's really reflected is when you look at when you look at how much of our revenue, overall revenue as a percentage of GDP, is attributable to individual tax rates. And when you look at it on that basis of comparison, you see that today relative to what we've paid in the past, the revenue that the taxes that we pay are far less relative to GDP than they have been in a long, long time.
Talking to Caroline Bruckner from American University, looking at various plans, ideas about taxes on wealthier Americans. Caroline, one common objection brought up is, okay, you raise the marginal rates for wealthier Americans. They will find ways, loopholes, things like that to avoid paying at those rates, or it'll be a disincentive for them to do money, do things that make that much money. So does it really work the way it's intended?
I don't think the economic evidence necessarily shows that to be true. I think that the economy has certainly thrived in instances where there have been much higher tax rates, and it is certainly starting to, or at least CBO's most recent projections show that at a time where our tax rates have been cut and will be from now through 2025, because remember, the tax reforms bill's individual tax cuts are only effective through 2025. And their CBO's most recent projections, and that's the Congressional Budget Office that does all sorts of economic projections on economic growth, they're showing that actually growth is going to slow over that same period.
Now let's turn to the idea of the wealth tax. You mentioned Senator Elizabeth Warren talking about that on people worth over $50 million and then a higher tax rate over $1 billion. What kind of revenue would an idea like that raise?
Well, it's interesting because she has actually put out she has actually looked to other groups that have proposed similar wealth taxes, a 1% wealth tax on households over $32 million, for example, could raise $1.3 trillion over a 10-year period. And that's, you know, a different proposal that was put out by the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. So, you know, there are groups who have looked at similar proposals that have found it to raise trillions of dollars. Whether or not the Joint Committee on Tax, which is the official budget scorekeeper for tax proposals passed by Congress, agrees with those outside estimates is an entirely different matter. They have their own estimators, they have their own models, and they tend to come up with, you know, their own numbers, and that is the nonpartisan number that you really have to go by. So you really can't rely too much on what outside folks say it's going to raise.
Have we seen a precedent for this idea of a wealth tax here in the United States?
I think that the precedent is really for raising marginal tax rates on the wealthy. When the individual income tax was first instituted in the early 20th century, it was really targeted to the wealthiest people, and only the wealthy paid individual income taxes. Now, add in a couple of wars and, you know, a Great Depression, and suddenly Congress had began to expand who had to pay taxes beyond just the incredibly wealthy to everybody. And then the advent of Social Security and Medicare, you had to start to increase other taxes for payroll taxes to pay for those programs. But in general, I think that, the idea that the wealthiest should pay their fair share or more than everyone else is something that has general acceptance among the American population.
We're talking to Caroline Bruckner, Managing Director of American University's Tax Policy Center, looking at the latest proposals to increase or decrease taxes on the wealthiest Americans. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think the wealthiest Americans should be paying more in taxes? If so, what do you think is the best way to do that? A higher tax rates, a wealth tax, something else? Or if you think looking to the rich for more tax revenue is a bad idea, let us know why. Let us know what you want to see happen. Or do you have a question for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation and take a look at the estate tax coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation with Caroline Bruckner, Managing Director of the COGOD Tax Policy Center at American University. We're talking about different proposals out there when it comes to taxes on the wealthiest Americans. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think taxes should go up for wealthier Americans? Why or why not? How should taxes be raised or lowered? What's your proposal? What questions do you have for our guest? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Caroline, before we go to our callers, I wanted to get into the estate tax. It was trimmed back some in the big Republican tax plan. Mitch McConnell talking about getting rid of it. Senator Bernie Sanders saying, nope, raise the estate tax rates. What's the estate tax? Who pays it now?
Well, so as part of tax reform for years 2018 through 2025, an individual can exempt from estate tax up to $11.2 million of their estate, and a married couple, that doubles for a married couple, so $22.4 million. And what that translates to is in 2018, as a result of this change, about 5,000 estates were projected to pay estate tax, and that number dropped down to about 1,700 estates in the country would now actually have to pay taxes on the estate taxes because they were above those exemption levels.
Then, apart from the individual types of taxes, people raise concerns about loopholes and ways to get around paying taxes, all legal in most cases, I think. Is that something people are looking at, closing what are so-called loopholes?
I think that people are looking at closing loopholes, but where I think people should be looking is the fact that there's an annual non-filing tax gap of $4 billion. And more often than not, especially when it comes to, individuals, there's an actual, underreporting of, for example, payroll taxes by self-employed folks of $65 billion. So rather than having to, raise taxes or create new taxes, if you just target folks that are not filing or underreporting, you raise quite a bit of money.
Let's go to our callers now. Tyler is with us in Fitchburg. Tyler, hi.
Hi. My two questions, observations. Without enough taxes, our government needs to borrow ever more money, encumbering ever more debt, and having to pay interest on the debt. So without sufficient tax income, the government is already $21 trillion in debt. Second point, corporate taxes have been reduced for probably decades. No wonder the government is basically bankrupt. Sorry to point this out, but these are issues that need to be discussed with the public.
Tyler, thanks a lot for the call. So, Caroline, insufficient tax collection, Tyler says, is the big culprit in the deficit. Obviously, it's income and output, too, but how right is he or wrong?
He actually makes a good point. Keep in mind that in 2017, we had an annual deficit, which is the difference between how much money we take in through tax collection and how much we spend. That was about $665 billion for 2017. CBO just put out a new report that projects in the coming years the annual deficit is going to be $1.2 trillion. And a lot of that is attributable to the tax cut bill that we passed in December of 2017 that took effect for 2018. And with respect to his point on corporate taxes, there's something to that. In 2017, corporations paid roughly $300 billion of corporate taxes. And this year, they're going to pay CBO is projecting that in 2019, they'll pay $205 billion. That's $100 billion less than they would have paid otherwise because the tax reform bill cut the corporate tax rate from 35% down to 21%.
Thanks for that call. And before we go back to our callers, the general argument in favor of tax cuts is okay, by not taking this money out of the economy, we're encouraging productive businesses. That's going to grow the economy long term anyway. That's going to bring in more taxes than if we just raise the taxes now. Is there anything to that?
I think that CBO's most recent publication on their budget outlook for 2019 and moving onward shows that they are projecting actually economic growth is going to slow, that the spike that the economy got as a result of the tax cut bill in 2018, it has now started to fizzle out, and that economic output growth is going to slow. And that could be really problematic.
Let's go to another caller now. Bill is with us in Waukesha. Bill, hello.
Hello.
Hi, what'd you want to bring up, Bill?
Well, I generally support a flat tax, but I agree with your guest that the public probably feels the very wealthiest need to contribute more. But my problem with that is they probably use fewer services than people who are in the lower income. And so it, as a matter of fairness, it's really not fair to make them cover for the behavior of others, such as, you know, people having children out of wedlock, whatever. But a flat tax is, in my opinion, the fairest form of tax because everybody would be equally invested in seeing that, you know, things are run properly, that their taxes aren't spent incorrectly. And where it is now, if you tax the very wealthy at a certain rate, they're going to hide their money somehow, end up not paying taxes. We have multiple examples of the very wealthiest in Wisconsin doing that.
Bill, I'm going to jump in. You gave us a lot there. Bill saying a flat tax is a fair tax, Caroline.
You know, the American public has wrestled with questions over whether to switch from a progressive tax system to a flat tax over the decades since the individual income tax was instituted in the early 20th century. And when you talk to tax historians like Joe Thorndike and others, they'll tell you that when flat tax proposals got really popular, each and every time the American public has rejected it as being fundamentally unfair. If you think about it, 35% of $10,000 to someone that's only making $10,000 is so much more than 35% to someone that's making a $200,000. It's the difference in some instances between being able to feed yourself and not. And those basic arguments against the proportionality of what a flat tax means to lower income earners and how that's viewed typically by the American public as being unfair really hasn't won over enough people to support a flat tax.
Thanks a lot for that call, Bill. We're talking to Caroline Bruckner from American University, looking at different proposals out there when it comes to taxing wealthier Americans. Let's go to another caller now. Let's go to Meg in Northern Illinois. Meg, hi.
Hi. So thank you so much for taking my call. I just want to put in a plug for the estate tax. I feel like having unlimited amounts of money passed down through families generation after generation ends up building an aristocracy and a lot of power in the hands of a few, and that ends up being bad for democracy.
Meg, thanks for the call at 800-642-1234. Caroline, as I dimly recall, some of the founders of the United States had that same concern, not so much an economic issue, but that too much power would be concentrated without an estate tax.
I think that the estate tax is certainly one key way, by not having an estate tax, that you can centralize wealth in the hands of a few. I think that, you know, the estate tax, as recently as 2000, was only allowed for an exemption level of $675,000 per estate, and you know, 52,000 estates paid that tax. Today, only 1,700 are going to pay that tax. It certainly reflects a consolidation and a centralization of wealth. It could be viewed as a consolidation. On the other hand, this is a fairly easy tax to administer because it's of the required filings and the ease of measuring it. And it just seems to me that if we are in need of revenue, That might be one place to look. Because keep in mind, when we doubled the exemption level as part of tax reform from $5 million to $11 million as part of tax reform, that cost American taxpayers $83 billion.
Now, one concern about the estate tax that is raised when people talk about getting rid of it is that, okay, if you have a large enough family farm or ranch, for a while people talk about publishing outfits, family businesses, basically, the estate tax can force families to dismantle those. Is that still a concern?
Well, it might have been in 2000 when the exemption level was $675,000, but, you know, the most recent estimates I've seen on the small businesses or closely held businesses and small farms that are impacted, a grand total of 80 were impacted under the projections for the estate tax at the $5 million exemption threshold in 2017.
Let's bring on one more caller. Randy is with us in Ripon. Randy, hello.
Hi. A little of my background here. I'm a self-employed carpenter. I can tell you, a self-employed, at least not for me, I'm not getting rich at this. I don't even know if I'll be able to keep my house. So a number of years ago, I read a book by Bill Gates Sr. and the heir to the Meyer family fortune, and they brought up the argument that they should be paying more taxes, and their wealth they made their wealth off our investment in education, infrastructure, and all, you know, a military protecting our corporate assets and all these things, and that they have an obligation to pay more because, according to this book, Gates said
Jump in, Randy, because we just have a few moments left. Caroline, in our last 30 seconds, is there a basic fairness issue here?
I think that there are a lot of extremely wealthy people in this country that are willing to pay more in taxes. I think on the other side of that, there are other, very wealthy folks who say that they pay more than enough. And I think that politicians are looking at right now is just that general polling that has come out in recent days showing that, by and large, the American public is very supportive of increasing taxes on the incredibly wealthy.
Caroline, thanks a lot for joining us today. That was Caroline Bruckner from American University looking at taxes and wealthy Americans. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. You're listening to the Ideas Network.